Joining us today on the Anti-Neocon Report is Mr. Scott Ricard, former American intelligence linguist and a veteran of communications technology like Cygnet and ComSec. And we're going to be talking about the Western media's propaganda, particularly in regards to Ukraine, but across the board, really. Who is feeding us this junk and why?
We'll do it live!
You are listening to the ANC Report with your host, Brian Dawson.
Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm pretty good.
Right on.
I'm well. I'm wondering, what's your two cents on the latest propaganda from Ukraine?
It's incredible how creative these people are. And then when their stories fall apart, you know, they just kind of, they're like, damn, that one didn't work either.
Yeah, it's a little bit like either one of the Iraq wars. They get busted in one lie and just move on to the next one and just forget about the appalling claims they made before.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for the analysis of the black boxes of the mysterious downing of yet another Malaysian aircraft. That's very strange.
Come on now, Vladimir Putin shot that down with lasers from his eyes.
is that possible now?
Why not? He was riding on a dinosaur and he shot it with lasers. It's on Fox.
It's on Fox. Well, then it's true. It must be true then. Yeah, it's so sad. You know, there's this guy Anthony Schaefer, right? He's on Fox quite a bit these days talking about ISIS. He's become the ISIS expert, and it's very interesting because, you know, this is a guy who, you know, quote unquote, blew the whistle on Able Danger. This was a special project of the Defense Intelligence Agency.
Yeah, they burned his books.
Well, yeah, and in any case, they did actually. He claimed that they got rid of, you know, terabytes of data. You know, he kind of came out in a whistleblowing mode, but it's almost as if, you know, he came out as a potential sort of limited hangout for the right wing, you know, because he's kind of tied to the PNAC guys in a very close way, and you know, he's always on Newsmax. I'm sure you're familiar with that. You know, speaking of Hasbara outlets. Newsmax is one of my favorite sort of like B movie Hasbara. So,
well, that's the thing with Ukraine too, is the propaganda is too far out there that,
well, yes,
you have
and no.
to mix,
I mean,
it with a little bit of truth for the lies to sell.
Yeah,
and even Alex knows that, but
Alex
this stuff,
Jones.
You gotta mix it with something. You can't be completely like North Korean propaganda. It's sunny every day, and you know that doesn't work. And so, if we could, let's talk about what some of the propaganda is, and then where it's coming from, and who's trying to pitch it. I guess starting with the we knocked out Russian tank columns in the middle of the night with ancient artillery, or there's an invasion because we caught 10 guys in the unmarked border.
It's, well, listen, I mean, you could probably start, you know, from the beginning, you know, if you want to, you know, go back to Crimea.
I was going to start recent and go backwards, but yeah, we can go chronologically. Let's start.
Yeah.
Well, you want to go all the way back to December, or I don't know.
Yeah, or we could even start, go into the, go into this Molotov cocktail party, you know, that would be entirely unacceptable. You know, somebody posted something this week that I thought was interesting. He says, well, there's always Molotov, so we could take 80% gasoline and 20% dish soap. He says, just like napalm. He said, you know, it's a man-made napalm. He's trying to instruct people on how to make Molotov cocktails because, you know, apparently, if you're on the right side, that's okay, you know?
Well, of course.
I haven't seen any Molotov cocktails in the United States anytime recently, but I can tell you that the militarized police force here would have nothing to do with that. There would be a lot of shot Americans. So it'd be a completely different scenario than what we saw in Maidan Square. So yeah, you can start with Maidan Square. That was a perfect example, you know, supporting individuals that are throwing Molotov cocktails. Unbelievable. You know, I just cannot fathom where that would be okay in anyone's country. You know, that I find that is to be, and you know, obviously the whole, I think there was a great report I saw come out this week. Somebody had listed a just a tremendous number of NGOs operating in Russia and Ukraine, and they were very, very detailed. And I've put together probably a good 40 or 50 myself. But you know, the more research you do on these, the more you'll find. And then, you know, just as you were saying, you know, the just the lies upon lies, piling lies upon lies with these. These NGOs built communication networks. You know, they had small newspapers. You know, they go all the way up into the BBC, you know, all the way into Reuters. One of the guys that I mentioned in a message to you was this guy, Jonathan Marcus. Mm-hmm. Jonathan is tied into, you know, some very interesting organizations. The IISS, I don't know if you're the Institute for Security Studies. It's a, one of these incredibly, I would say, closely tied experts in the industry where they've tied all these guys in, you know, think tanks. And IISS is nothing short of a sort of a headquarters for London's, I guess, think tank Hasbara network. You know, I would you don't have to look very far to look at the members.
Well, the bar is even lower than that, because usually this stuff is basically an academic who agrees with our propaganda, and so suddenly they're an expert, and we're not going to have anyone else even voiced here. But well, they'll take a couch potato with no credentials whatsoever, as long as they're saying what they want to, and throw them on TV like an Elliot Higgins type on Syria.
Oh, sure,
they don't care.
Sure. Well, no, but these are the ones where if you ever see the term expert, and these are the experts because they've been groomed into these positions. You know, these are the folks that have gone to Oxford. You know, they've gone through their, if you look at their careers, they've always got like about a 4 or 5 years missing between college and when they actually started to work. And they get in these, you know, Cambridge and Oxford type of Rhodes Scholar schools, like the Richmond University. It's a Rhodes Scholar school for mm-hmm. the Central Intelligence Agency in London. And so a lot of these folks, you know, get into, you know, these academic careers that are, you know, tied into. And then obviously they come out and work as journalists, work in these, you know, they get these fabulous internships at Council on Foreign Relations. And
we always would see people coming out of Camp Perry in Williamsburg, where I went to college at William & Mary. And everybody knows Camp Perry is actually CIA.
There you go.
Someone disappears from there for a long time. You know they're working for Langley.
Yeah, and it's interesting you should say that, because the schools are very indicative of what path you're taking. You know, Tufts University is a good example of that, where Tufts is really the creme de la creme of the State Department grooming for the Central Intelligence staff. And these guys that come out of Tufts, once again, go through Rhodes Scholar Program. I mean, you don't have to look very far. Look at the dean of the Fletcher School of Law is the former Allied Commander of NATO for 8 years, James Stavridis. So he, you know, he moved into the dean of that school. And as a graduate of the Fletcher School of Law, you are, you know, on a good path to be, at a minimum, an ambassador. And then there's a lot of ties into the existing infrastructure that runs the West. And I'm, when I say that, I'm talking about the alliance between the Swedes, the Polish, the French, the British, and so on and so forth across, you know, the current controllers of the economic, geopolitical, and military operations. You know, these think tanks are where they plan and strategize, and then they decide who they're going to support in the elections. And then that's, you know, basically they're picking their puppets in these think tanks.
That's the other way to become an ambassador, is to give a large campaign donation to the president.
Yes, well, that donation doesn't come, you know, independently. It comes as a decision among a group of people.
Of course.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about Marcus for a while, what you were saying, because it takes an enormous amount of work to kind of narrow it down, because it's impossible to tackle all the Hasbara people, but
there's thousands of them. You know, what's interesting is that if you go in, you know, there's, you know, Marcus is a good example. You know, he's, you know, this guy comes, you know, from us to us from, you know, things like the Jewish National Fund. He's a Ben Gurion University grad. This guy is, you know, obviously he's very tied into the BBC. He's like considered the expert on intelligence when it comes to, you know, going into the background of the entire communities of, you know, both MI6 and British intelligence, GCHQ, Americans. And so when these guys come out and speak, you know, they're given a lot of credence. And Jonathan Marcus put out something about a tank being spotted, you know, that the specific model of the tank was only the Russians had this tank. And this tank was, I think it was a T-72, or, and there's no way that the Russians haven't crossed the border. And, you know, and they slap up the this mocked up satellite image from, you know, global, I can't remember the name of the independent satellite network, but this independent satellite network is invested in by all these government intelligence agencies.
There's nothing in the grainy satellite photo. Where have we seen that before?
Yeah. So once again, you know, and but people buy it, you know, because people haven't been through the same, you know, practice, and so they say, well, no,
they
these
buy
experts
it too because it fits the conclusion they want. They want an exciting conflict with Russia, and so they just accept whatever is said. Because
well,
they don't like
know.
Putin because
I wouldn't say
they feel
they
like he's against gay people or whatever. It fits their worldview.
Well, I wouldn't say they want. I'd say that they've been conditioned to accept it, and the condition. It's like cheering for your national football team. You know, they've been conditioned to cheer for something, and you know, a lot of these guys are, you know, cheering for it because, you know, look at my president, he's successful. Or they're cheering for it as, my God, this president's making such mistakes, thank God we're getting past him. You know, so they have all these false sort of narratives that they're believing based upon their, you know, their indoctrinated feelings that they're supposed to be feeling about it. I don't know if they want to feel it. I just think that that's what they feel like they're supposed to have feeling. They're like, hey, that's what it said on MSNBC. So that's why I watched that show. So that's how I'm supposed to feel.
Yeah.
You know, so, oh, well, that's what it said on Fox. And I watched that show. So that's how I'm supposed to feel. So I think it's, I don't think it's actually a choice for a lot of these people. I think that they're just, you know, they're just creatures of habit. And it's not a, it's, I don't think that anybody's put enough time and effort into it, because it takes a lot of time. One thing, I was talking to Gareth Porter, really great researcher. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, why is there no, you know, nobody talking about this? And I said, because it, you know, even the intelligence community, I've got some former colleagues that are now lieutenant generals in the intelligence community, and you know, they're out, you know, philandering, you know, fooling around with their wives, getting drunk with Russian girls in Moscow, and you know, it takes a lot of time and effort and real focus to get down to the brass nut, you know, brass tacks on these issues, and even the guys in the intelligence community don't spend the time to do it. You know, they're busy fooling around, and they've got other things to do in their lives. So I agree,
but you would think after a series of lies that were easily debunked came in a row, that the next time they made a claim like thousands of Russian ground troops are here, every time they say something it ends up being false, that either they would step up and have better propaganda, or they'd learn to be skeptical of what was being said.
Well, the people who are, you know, interested and don't have they don't have a team in the game. See, I don't have a team in the game. That's the problem, is that if you think your team is losing, you're looking for any winning effort. And I think that's what we see with, you know, well, what's the next lie we can throw over the wall? See if we can bring some more people on our side. I gotta tell you that these perpetual, you know, lies. I mean, you know, trying to support, you know, it's like that tangled web we weave type thing. You know, there's no going back. You know, they continually have to perpetuate the lie. Because then they'd have to say, well, you know what? We've been dishonest with you up to this point. It's about time we started to be honest. And that's, you know, that's not going to happen until, you know, one of the leading countries is, you know, really overthrown through some sort of Commonwealth type war, because it's certainly not going to happen, you know, with the current administrations and current individuals that are really running the military and the intelligence communities. You know, these guys, I know these guys, are all about winning. It doesn't matter right or wrong, you know, the exceptional, you know, we the people can't handle the truth type thing. You know, that, you know, sadly, that scene out of the that crappy movie in Guantanamo. I'm not very good with actors, but I love the guy. But
Jack Nicholson?
Jack Nicholson. Thank you. Yeah.
Was it A Few Good Men?
Yeah, it was Tom Cruise. Good Men. Yeah. Yeah, but the fact is,
John
the military
Grisham novel thing.
It's a John Grisham novel. Thank you.
He was my neighbor. That's the only reason I remember.
Oh, that's too funny. Yeah. But the fact is that that's what it comes down to, is that the, you know, people are very proud of what they do. You know, they could care less if they're right or wrong. They just wanted to be the best at it, and they, you know, they have these just ingrained beliefs that you know, they're fighting, you know, on the right side no matter what. And you know, I put them in the same category of these 10 million extremists on the side of Islam. You know, you've got 10 million, you know, out of the 1.5 billion across the planet, there's only about 10 million, which is, you know, easily less than 1%, that are, you know, crazed to, you know, build back the caliphate. You know,
I said a few weeks ago that we would look at religious fanaticism, Zionism for Jews and Christians, and then you have fanatical Muslims too, but the partisan politics and tribal loyalty, whether it's American exceptionalism or Democrats and Republican, is just as fanatic and just as stupid.
Sure, I totally agree. And see, that's what you see in these, if, you know, I can tell when I'm reading these propaganda pieces, you know, what faction they're coming from, you know, whether it is a left-wing faction, whether it is a right-wing faction, what the ties are to, you know, let's say either a NATO perspective, or what the ties are from a petroleum business perspective. You know, there's so many different players that are, you know, paid mouthpieces, you know, hundreds, maybe not hundreds of thousands, but at least tens of thousands of paid mouthpieces that, you know, are in the journalism business, but obviously in these think tanks, and then also surrounding the businesses are the lobbyists, and every one of these guys has an ear for the news outlets, because the news outlets are told, hey, go talk to this guy or pick up this guy's story, and you know, they're not going to go and pick up, you know, the kind of stories that, say, Don Baer's putting out, or Gareth Porter, or, you know, these guys aren't getting top billing. They're like, hey, we really don't want that guy's message getting out. So that kind of suppression and sort of censored based news is, and people say, well, you've got the internet, how come you're not making any progress? And it's like, well, do you realize how few people use the internet to collect intelligence and to actually share information? You know, it seems like a lot more to us because we're doing it, and there's a lot more people out there doing it now. But comparatively to the number of people that are still watching television and reading newspapers, you know, we're still 1 in 10 is getting stuff off of the internet. And that doesn't mean that they're going for alternative media.
And there's a lot of propaganda on the web too, because,
and then there's a lot of stuff
recycled there.
Yeah, and there's a lot of propaganda on the web that is not even supporting the status quo agendas. There's a lot of, you know, potentially misinformation that's purposely put out there to discredit people. There's a lot of misinformation that's put out there just because people aren't very good at what they do and they're very imaginative. There's also propaganda that gets out there that's funny, you know, because people are making jokes about stuff and people actually think they're real, you know.
Yeah,
there's,
yeah. onion satire stuff, and also there's a lot of sensationalism because it sells.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, not just that it sells, you know, I liked one of my favorite pictures I saw after the beheading of James Foley was a green screen with, you know, CIA logos and just because the nature of how that particular production was done. Now, whether he was beheaded or not is not of interest to me. You know, the fact just faking it or doing it would have been just as effective. And, you know, obviously, certainly more effective against the end of his life if they actually did it. But from a perspective on how it was produced, the quality of the fading in and fading out, the nature of, you know, slicing the neck 9 times and not a splat of blood coming out. It was just kind of a questionable thing. And then trying to blame it on a short British rapper at one point when the guy was clearly, you know, 2 feet taller than that rapper. What was his name?
I don't remember. They basically found someone who was left-handed and from London and said, aha, it's him.
Yeah,
no reason or motive to fake it. There's a huge risk to fake it, and they've been cutting heads off for 2 years, so I don't think they green-screened the final one. They just killed him.
I didn't think the fact that everyone
is willing to doubt something like that because they've been lied to about everything else shows the atmosphere.
I don't think you should say everyone. I think that the community that we know on the internet, and remember, we're not everyone. We are a microcosm. You know, 80. To give you an example, the average American watches 35 hours of television a week now, and 80% of Americans are getting their news from television, right? So that's like you're 2 out of 10 are getting it from somewhere else, like on the internet or a newspaper or something like that. And so if you're watching 35 hours of television, you're only probably getting about maybe 4 or 5 of that of news a week. So that's, you know, that's where I take under consideration that we're not dealing with a lot of sharp tools. Mm-hmm. You know, we're dealing with a lot of very dull, misinformed, you know, highly, I would say, opinionated and very poorly informed, extremely emotional society. You know, they'll react.
Well, for those folks on watching the BoobTube, and as well as a large portion of the people on the web, ISIS just appeared recently. I mean, they
right.
don't even know that the U.S. has been financing ISIS for years in Syria. Our so-called moderates in the FSA.
Right, right. No, it's been going on for...
They've been chopping off heads the whole time.
Right.
And grilling them and eating organs and things worse than that even.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. That's what made me so suspicious about the James Foley head, incident, is that it was so clinical. You know, where, you know, every other one of them I've seen have been, you know, incredibly barbaric and had no qualms about, you know, showing the actual act. Then that was it seemed overproduced comparatively to the ones, because you're right. You know, you can go find hundreds of far more graphic and horrific. I guess events like that, and so and the other thing is that
but when they were killing Syrians, it didn't matter. It's only when they need a pretext to get back in Iraq.
Well, that's another thing that made it very suspicious is that, you know, they made such a production out of it, and they made, you know, that was the one that they and it was, you know, I got to tell you, it was really well produced. You know, they made sure they had a guy up there that could speak English. They're always doing it in Arabic, you know. So mm-hmm. now they got a guy who's articulate, and then they try to pawn off, that particular voice to this.
And they allowed his entire speech to be aired. Like, oh, let's let him recruit, you know, give him a nice speech. And then they had Foley give his speech.
Yeah.
You know, normally, why would you allow the enemy to have their prime time on television to say what they want and recruit who they want and give all the reasons? I mean, that's so stupid unless you're supporting both sides the whole time.
Absolutely. I mean, look at the benefit that the U.S. government and their allies got by allowing this force to go in and force Maliki out, you know. And then, you know, they're doing limited strikes, okay? So you know as well as I do, you know, in any sort of organization, you have individuals in the organization that you can't count on. Well, those are where your limited strikes are hitting. You're like, okay, remember those leaders that weren't really listening to us in the meetings? Let's go take those guys out. That's a good time to get rid of them. Mm-hmm. So, the limited strikes certainly aren't having that much of an effect, because obviously they were right back to Raqqa, and they took the air base that's been held the entire war from the Syrians, and then the Americans are like, well, we're considering helping to bomb in Syria, but we're still thinking about it. And while these guys, you know, are showing up, you know, with brand new gear from Mosul, and there's we're doing limited strikes, so we've got 60 drones now flying on a daily basis.
It's confusing a lot of the FSA American supporters, because I mean the Americans who've been supporting it and saying Assad's a monster and blah blah blah, because they don't understand, why is Assad bombing ISIS? Isn't he the bad guy? Like, he's been fighting them the entire time, and now that the U.S. Needs to fight them too. They're really confused on how to sell this.
Yeah, I think it's really keen to understand that there is very little difference between Al Nusra, Al Qaeda, ISIS. There was one other one. I'm forgetting the name. Majid, or but in any case, there's very few differences, other than the fact that I will say that this ISIS organization is clearly headed by Saudi clerics and Saudi based theological ideology. I would say, you know, and by the way, those are our best allies in the funding and the recruiting and the loyalty to the Sunni sort of caliphate ideology or however you want to put it for this. And these are people who understand, you know, that's where I actually have, I won't say sympathies, but where I understand where the Arabs are coming from in this region is that they're clearly against the Sykes-Picot Act. You know, and that's not been made very clear to most Americans as to, you know, what is this caliphate? Well, this caliphate is what existed before the Ottoman Empire, and actually somewhat coexisted with the Ottoman Empire in some of the regions. The Ottoman Empire was actually a lot more, secular than you know we would imagine when it came to allowing multiple religions to practice, as long as they were obviously paying their taxes and being cooperative citizens under their Ottoman Empire's rule or whoever their surrogate was in that area. So
today it's just a given that religious tribe and a government are one and the same. Like, well, he's a Sunni, so this, or he's a Shiite, so this. I mean, it absolutely is drawn around religious lines. And like, what is the exact difference in, religious beliefs? It's all Islam. What is the exact, hair splitting difference between these two sections? And some people don't even know. It's just more of tribal nepotism. And well, the government's going to pay their own group lots of money and not the other one.
Small percentages, of those nations. You know, these are small. I mean, there's what is it? Somewhere around 75 million in Iran, 16 million in Saudi Arabia. So you can't say, oh, all 75 million Shiite in Iran think the same way. You know, there's
I'm
not saying you. I'm just saying.
But
that's how it's internalized by most people in the West.
That's
one of those people. That's where I totally agree with you. It's just it's totally not internalized. You know, when we're talking about ISIS and this new caliphate, the Islamic State, you're talking about less than 10,000 troops. You know, 1,000 troops went up against 30,000 when they took the northern part of Iraq. because, you know, in my opinion, I'll bet a lot of those guys that were, you know, basically Sunnis in the north probably already had an agreement. Hey, when you guys come across the border, we're putting our weapons down and we're skedaddling because we really agree with you and we're kind of sick and tired of this guy Maliki. And let's just say we got some good gear the Americans left behind, so come get it. So, you know, there's a good chance that those guys were expecting it. And then at the same time, you know, there was really no resistance until they started to go down towards Baghdad. And that's, you know, once they started to go towards Baghdad, there was some resistance. Like, okay, we're going to have some problems now. And, you know, that's when they're like, limited strikes. Who are the guys we told that you shouldn't be going to Baghdad? And they did it anyway. Those are the limited strikes we're going to be doing now.
Yeah, so, you got to whip the horse now and then.
Well, that's the thing is that, you know, it's the more time you have to analyze this and, you know, the more time you realize that, you know, these are the numbers that they were dealing with. You've got, you know, less than 1,000 troops going up against 30,000 and they win decisively because, you know, ISIS is totally is under, you know, 10,000 troops. And, you know, from a I'll call it a an ideological support for that kind of extremism, you know, even though I have to admit, I do agree that Sykes-Picot was an illegal act by, you know, the British and the French. And obviously there's the sovereignty of that that area has been bastardized, you know, far worse than the Ottoman Empire did by the British and the French and the American empires. So and from that perspective, I'm in agreement with the Arabs in the region who understand the history of what the West has done there over the past century. It, you know, made the Ottoman Empire look like choir boys. So, you know, so that's where I would say that I understand what they've gone up against. But yet you don't see that kind of, you know, objectivity in any reporting, because you said it exactly the same way that I agreed with, is that 100% they're playing on the key words. You know, not saying, oh, hey, by the way, the mercenaries that we were hiring to go up against Assad, we decided to go ahead and let them invade, you know, Iraq for a little bit to get rid of Maliki because he wasn't, you know, cooperating since around 2010, 2011.
Well, he signed the status forces agreement. That's why they got rid of him. But it also serves as a pretext to get into Syria, because what they'll do, what I think they'll do, and I'm not trying to give them ideas, is they'll go into Iraq and then they'll bounce across the border to Syria and we'll say, well, we can't follow him in there. We can't do our airstrikes in Syria because of Assad, even though he's been striking them with his own planes. And say, well, in order to finish him off, we're going to have to allow the United States into Syria. And, you know, they're just going to blow up all their infrastructure.
Well, and the other thing, too, is that these guys have probably some of the best leadership. You think about it, you know, Assad's obviously got a formidable army, and you know, he's had some help from the Lebanese Hezbollah, which is really just a militia. They make it, once again, they make it sound like it's this, you know, terrible terrorist force in Lebanon. And it coexists with the Lebanese military. So just understand that it's a militia.
They defended Lebanon from Israel without the Lebanese military.
Well, yes, there's that. But the point
is, of course, the Israelis aren't used to fighting people who have something more than rocks to throw. So,
right. Well, I think what's keen to understand is that the Lebanese military is very cooperative with the West. There, you can go any time of the year to Pentagon City, right there next to Crystal City in the Pentagon, and go stay at a couple of the hotels there that are right near the Pentagon and meet all kinds of officers from the Lebanese military. And, you know, they are... when you talk about Hezbollah, we're talking about a militia of a bunch of guys that are, let's just say, pretty gung-ho. And they're like, you know, we've had enough of being attacked by these bastards that have invaded our neighbors and have been there for half a century. And it basically, Marine Corps, Green Beret, whatever type of special forces you want to call them, then they're very well respected by the Lebanese military. They're not like a threat to the Lebanese military. So these guys actually went in and helped Assad, because even though the forces are small that are fighting Assad in Syria, for the past, almost 3 to 4 years, even though these forces are small, they're very well informed. They're getting good information from NATO and their partners. They're operating very freely in Turkey. They're operating very freely in the Kurdish regional government's region of Iraq. They're operating very freely in Jordan. And so they're, able to crisscross borders. We've got intelligence to say, look, hey, there's nobody there right now. Go, go, go. So we can get them in. We can get them out. It's a large enough territory where Assad can defend himself, but he can't wipe them out because we're too busy informing the forces that we're enabling in that area. And the fact is that is the way that it should be reported, because that's what's actually happening. But the information that we get about this,
but it'll never happen. I mean, what's in the U.S. interest to topple Assad? Well, it's indirect attack on Iran and Hezbollah. And how is that in U.S. interest? It's not. It's an Israeli interest.
It's an Israeli interest, and that's where we're dealing with Hezbollah in the news over and over and over again. So they keep the same line. If you mention the term Hamas or Hezbollah or ISIS or Al Qaeda or Al Nusra, these are the key names that the average water cooler news recipient in the United States gets, and he goes, "Oh, you mean those terrorist groups?" So it's immediately a terrorist group because it's been the word association. I guess Sigmund Freud's nephew was very good at assimilating the word association into our news networks.
Eddie Bernays.
So you're dealing with a society that is, has a form of, it's a disorder. It's an information disorder, where that information is. It's a childhood disease that is perpetuated throughout adulthood and until the grave. And the only way that I've seen anybody getting around it is to stop the heroin, stop the use of the mainstream media, because that's what it is. It's mainlining your brain into believing something that is a fantasy. And the more that we can talk about, the more we can talk about how effective the propaganda is, whether you're watching the right, whether you're watching the left, I love it. Americans go, well, I like BBC because it has a lot more information. It's just more propaganda. I mean, it's machine guns, and it's not as Jerry Springer like. So. The Jerry Springer, news, we can go into the sort of the Alex Jones agendas, or we can go into Howard Stern, probably one of the worst propagandists out of New York City. And then we can get into CNN and talk about the propagandists like Jeffrey Tobin, Barbara Starr, it's just so ugly. Wolf Blitzer. I mean,
Former AIPAC employee,
a former AIPAC guy. It's nauseous. And then you take these, quote unquote, experts like Jonathan Marcus, who's part of these organizations that are. These institutes that they come up with are just tremendous networks of propaganda that these guys have been working together in schools and in different arenas for decades, sharing their ideologies and sharing their ideas and different venues around the world, all types of different meetings, and they travel around the world basically for institutes of international strategic studies, this is the IISS one. They travel around the world speaking to crowds. you know, telling them how they're the experts, and people buy it, people believe it. And so when they go to read, you know, BBC, they say, well, that was a Jonathan Marcus article, that had to be it, you know, because that guy's probably one of the best. And no, he's one of the best at propaganda. And that's what
it too. If you want to be on TV or you want to be in the New York Times, you know you've got to toe the government line or you're not going to be there. And so you have people saying, well, I want this job and this career and I want these credentials. So I'm just going to say, I'm just going to agree with this and repeat stuff I've been hearing and then I'll get published.
True, but a lot of those guys even don't know any better. You know, they're just reading and repeating what they're not doing any of their own research. They shouldn't call them reporters. These are, you know, they're readers. You know, so they're not doing any of their own research. They're not, you know, fact checking things on their own. They have people do it for them. And some of them actually, you know, they're drinking their own bathwater. They believe it. So, you know, they're like sort of the John McCain, the perfect sort of MK Ultra. You know, you can depend on him to say the right thing at the right time.
Game theory. The truth he's is. A very predictable clown.
Oh yeah, I think that's why they allowed him to be a senator, and they allowed him to be a presidential candidate. You know what I mean? Look, I mean, you couldn't have
his family put the time in. His dad was an admiral that helped cover up the USS Liberty.
Sure.
So they knew. I'll be right back with Scott Ricard. This is your quick commercial because he had a phone call, so I'm just filling the dead air here. On Amazon.com right now, you can buy The Separation of Business and State. That's my newest book. It goes over how the government screws up basically everything it gets involved with. Do you hate the government? Not as much as I do, because I wrote it all down. Separation of Business and State, or just write Ryan Dawson in the Amazon search box and pick up that book today. There's also an ebook version on Amazon or Smashwords. They're the same price. It doesn't matter. Amazon might be a little easier because I think Smashwords makes you fill out a form or whatever. And I think Scott has finished with his phone call. So, okay, we were talking about John McCain and those clowns and propaganda from the West about Ukraine and others. And we're getting back to it. If you notice, folks, we're giving you the names. We're not giving you vague paths to nowhere saying the Illuminati or the globalists or something like that. We're talking about specific people and specific NGOs, real names, real organizations. And it's not all the Bilderbergs or whatever. We're talking about the Oxford Analytica and things you may or may not have heard of. But these are real people, and this is a real situation, and people are being killed over it. And it's very important, and I think you should thank guests like this. And if PayPal ever gets the stick out of their ass to allow donations again, please consider donating on the button below. Or if you have bitcoins, please consider donating through Bitcoin. You can click the Bitcoin button. It has my address to the wallet on there, and you nerds know how to deal with that stuff. If you don't have bitcoins, it's something you might want to research, not to gamble with, but just to have as a backup, if nothing else, for a currency, just in case there's hyperinflation or the dollar bottoms out. All right, now back to Scott Ricard.
Yeah,
John McCain is a very predictable clown, I was saying.
Oh, absolutely.
We see now some propaganda where they keep saying invasion, invasion, and the people in Ukraine, Kiev side anyway, are trying to join NATO. Now, I don't know that NATO accepts members who are in the middle of a conflict, but this is the kind of thing, because someone like John McCain certainly would go for it, but this could escalate enormously, quite quickly, if they were dumb enough to do something like that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the point is that it is a cry for help from Poroshenko, obviously, because he is miserably losing support from not just the ethnic Russians that weren't involved, but certainly the Ukraine people are kind of sick of it. You know, the parliament's already been disbanded. You've got tremendous losses on both sides, whereby those numbers are not even talked about in the Western Hezbollah networks, and so you have the only information that comes out is what is Russia's involvement, aside from the fact that NATO is supplying Poroshenko's unwilling troops who are, you know, these guys don't want
they
this
keep,
war.
Yeah, and they keep painting it as if it's either just ethnic Russians or Russia is, you know, forced these people to behave this way. They couldn't possibly just not want another oligarch running the country who was installed from outside, who is also part of the, what, 15 billion euros in debt. They don't, and they're tired of it. I mean, they don't have to be ethnic Russians to be tired of debt and oligarchs running the country.
That's absolutely true, too. I mean, you have a scenario whereby there's been no success in any of this sort of Newland, Maidan, we'll call it a debacle, or however you want to refer to these, this, you know, criminal coup that was imposed upon the Ukrainian people. And there's been, you know, everybody's sort of running away from the failure. And that just, it's who is the next, you know, victim, or at least a quitter, on this, this team of, you know, really, Zionist supported, you know, they're all backed by Poland. They're all backed by, these Swedes and these, British, you know, these groups that are involved. They are, you know, 100%, you know, look, I mean, take a look at like companies like, I don't know if you ever looked into this Oxford Analytica. Oxford Analytica is, you know, a group that operates mostly out of New York and London, but they're also very well embedded in the Department of Defense, Ministry of Defense, actually in Germany, as well as in Poland and in Sweden. And these are, you know, along the same lines of the IISS guys. And these are the folks that are really pushing the Hasbara information about, you know, this this horrific imposition that Russia is supposedly putting on Ukraine and causing the failure of Ukraine, when in fact it is collapsing from the inside. And it's collapsing because, like you said, the Ukrainian people do not want to have, they have seen through the silver lining that was painted, you know, during this this small but very well publicized and very well marketed Maidan revolution. And so I think, you know, they've come to their senses, you know, throughout the summer, and they said, you know, here, and as a last gasp, they're trying to find ways to say, you see, we told you Russia was going to invade, you know, but they haven't been able to prove any kind of invasion. You know, they're obviously, the Russians are saying, you know, hey, we're definitely going to help these guys because, first of all, what you've done is illegal. And secondly, you know, they're defenseless. You know, NATO's supplying one side. You know, we're trying to, like, say, give them a chance. You know, think about if this was happening on the borders of the United States. You think the United States would just sit back quietly if China was, instigating a coup in Mexico or in Canada? You know, the United States would be going, you know, off the chain. We'd be at full, you know, there'd be full deployments, not only on the borders but across the borders. There'd be all kinds of overflights. We probably wouldn't be shooting down commercial airliners, but
unless they're from Iran.
Oh, unless they're from Iran, yeah, of course. Good point. But my point is that, you know, it's just, it's a,
that
it's
was
a
dark, very hypocr- but I,
it was, I mean, dark, but I got it. I got it, unfortunately. Sadly, I got it. And, you know, and by the way, the Ukrainians had shot down a commercial airline in the past, somewhere around 10 years ago. It was an accident as well. And it was interesting is that it still hasn't been proven whether it was shot with an aircraft or whether it was shot, MH-17. Was shot with an aircraft or was shot with surface-to-air missile.
It's not really clear, but the pictures, just, I'm a layman, I'm not a weapons expert or anything, but it sure looked like bullet holes all over the metal debris there. Not a missile, is one big hole, right? And this looked like a gun just strafed it. There's holes all over the place. You don't get that from a crash. So I'm not going to hold my breath on these black boxes.
Well, I won't either. But I mean, my point is that yeah, they've certainly taken their time releasing that information. But my whole point is that, you know, who knows who came along? You know, there's a lot of guys running around pretty out of their minds right now with weapons. So somebody could just come along, take some shots at that thing while they were, you know, going through the wreckage. So, you know, I don't have a whole lot of faith in the analysis of it, just because, you know, obviously there was you know, a lot of NATO
were that the
surveillance
case, the bullets
in the area
would still be there too.
Sure, you'd think,
unless they shot it and then went and got their bullets. I mean there's always a way to explain.
There's a way if they do
still,
the forensics.
You have to explain it and acknowledge that the holes are there and say, well, okay, someone on the ground shot it after it was down, or it was shot when it was in the air. What
no
they're
idea.
Doing is ignoring that it happened at all. And you combine that with the reports of supposed intercept conversations that actually happened the day before it was shot, and how they're citing Twitter feeds and social media for their evidence, and they're just lying. It's so obvious.
I think you know, they had so much NATO surveillance in the area. There was an exercise going on. There was just way too much potential to, if there was some impropriety done by the Russians or
Operation Seabreeze or something was happening at the same time.
Exactly. It was the last day of the exercise. So there's absolutely no way that they didn't have an inkling of what was going on. And then if it was damning to the puppet state that we put in place, it would obviously been, you know, hey, well, we don't need to talk about that, you know, because that's unfortunately, but that's how the modus operandi is of, you know, you don't publicize your allies' mistakes.
It's like another Litvinenko thing. An event
exactly.
happened, we got to blame somebody, no matter how stupid it sounds, because we can't acknowledge what really went down because it makes us look so bad. So just say Russia did it.
Right. No matter how hard that is to prove. You know, impossible it will be to prove, you know, because that way at least we're not, you know, admitting any sort of involvement, you know, because that's what my point to the whole thing is, that something, if something was done across from the Russian border, it would have been very easy for them to see with the technologies that we have today, with the kind of people and equipment that was in that area. And obviously, it wasn't like they were like, well, let's not focus what's going on in that area today. You know, we got something else more important to focus on in that region. And it's absolutely untrue. They've got plenty of intelligence capability in that region. There's obviously
got to be monitoring the sky. It's in the middle of a
civil
war. Why would you not be looking? You know,
there's plenty of space to do that where they're operating in the Black Sea. You know, they've had ships there for, you know, pretty much a constant for several years, and it is unheard of that the types of technologies that the Americans can do from space exceeds.
Well, that alone, what you're saying about the ships, we just say that as a given. Just imagine if Russia or whoever had ships in the Gulf of Mexico, and we were just
on a regular basis.
Yeah, well, yeah, of course they do. They're doing a military exercise right there next to Texas or something. We'd never allow it.
And so that's why I say it's an extremely hypocritical perspective. You know, but the key thing here is that from space, you know, that's how they can operate these theaters from the CONUS bases like CENTCOM in Tampa and other other operations. They're actually, you know, managing warfare, you know, using geospatial technologies that, you know, had to be airborne-based technologies that were airborne platforms, you know, platforms like SR-71s, U-2s, RC-135s, you know, those technologies are useful, but they're pretty much obsolete based upon the advancements that's been made in the geospatial sciences, because you've got, you know, a lot of those same capabilities are now on, you know, quote unquote secret satellites.
Yeah, Google Earth can show you.
Yeah, there you have it. I mean, look, you say that, it's a funny story. In the early, I guess the early to mid 80s, when Cuba and Ortega were basically attempting to work with Grenada. And obviously, we were pretty anti-Grenada government at the time because they were showing some favoritism to those areas. And they
They're
were going
against... Scott. They have Grenade in their name.
So, in any case, when we went down to do intelligence and reconnaissance on Grenada, obviously, you know, we hadn't done a whole lot of precursor work. You know, we didn't have Google Earth. We didn't have the capabilities that you have at your desktop, you know, in your house. We didn't have anything near that, you know, as an intelligence mapping tool, because we hadn't mapped Grenada at the time. We actually used tourist maps. So that was what, 30 years ago?
So wasn't it quite recently they bombed that Chinese center and blamed it on old maps? It was like 2000.
Oh, are you talking about during the Bosnian Wars?
No, after that. Quite recently. Well, it doesn't matter. I mean, old maps. That's what it was blamed on. I mean,
that's post-technology. That's a pretty lame excuse today. So,
and outdated maps. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm going to tell you. No, I would say 20 years ago, for sure. 15 years ago, probably. You know, 10 years ago, okay. Now you're starting to get into the realm of that's not possible. We got too good a technology that we have. And, you know, and obviously if it's an obscure area that, you know, no mapping has been done, that's pretty hard to find these days.
Yeah, sure. Well, they're not going to join NATO, but it is a cry for help from Poroshenko. But what I found fascinating is he and Putin were there shaking hands, making a deal, saying the aid is going to come by rail. It's going to come by trucks. And when the aid came by trucks, then Poroshenko turned right around and said, "Oh, it's an invasion. The Russians are coming. The Russians are coming." Right after he personally made the deal asking them to come.
Yeah, that's it was pretty interesting to see the very two-faced oligarchs. I had some hope that Poroshenko might have said, "You know what? I might have made a mistake here. I've just shut down my government. It's about time I go and talk to Vladimir Putin and cut a deal here." And I was thinking, okay, this is how it's done. You know, you got diplomacy. The guy realizes he made the bad choice, and maybe he's going to you know, say something that's intelligent. And as soon as he leaves, he starts talking. I'm like, oh crap, here we go. I said it was just all dog and pony. And a lot of times I see this. You know, I wonder how much of that is, you know, how much of that is Putin cooperating with the oligarchs in the West versus, you know, actually, you know, just keeping him in check versus, you know, there's only so far he's willing to go anyway. And the same thing for them. There's only so far they're willing to go. And they're trying to get they're trying to bolster the people behind them to get sort of the, I guess the, what do you call that? The when the society gets behind it, and when you've got an agenda that is popular, then you're like, okay, see, now I've got something that I can get world opinion on, and there isn't anything.
Well, that's like Senkaku conflict over here between China and Japan. Mm-hmm. Neither one really needs those rocks, and they've been sharing the waterways and everything. It's just something to point to and yell about so that each side can bolster their, it's like saber rattling. They get the support of the public by, you know, in China by yelling about Japan and vice versa. So all the prejudiced people who either hate Japan or China will rally behind the leader.
Well,
so they yell about these rocks, but
I think
there's
it's
not
a little
be
more diabolical.
Japan and China. There's no way.
I think it's a little more diabolical for NATO and for the IMF. And for the initiatives that, you know, because this is a 20-year initiative, not just to claim, you know, inhabited islands, but yet to usurp another nation into a 500-year-old military alliance of of anti-Russian agenda. You know, this is the NATO alliance is extremely anti-Russian. It was originally formed with a predominant majority of very anti-Russians, and they were picking off all the former Russian states that were obviously
people like John Mersheimer, who I used to admire, claiming that NATO expansion is not about being anti-Russia. It's just about spreading democracy and interloping economies so that there's more peace in the area.
Yeah.
George Bush saying, these missiles in Poland, it's not for Russia. It's to defend them from Iran.
See, that's funny you should say it, because I think I see a lot of it has to do, you get the extremes like the Liz Wall, idiots, obviously former Hungarian, and I guess she's half Hungarian, half Filipino. And her angst, obviously, with Russia is that her grandparents or great-grandparents, whichever the case was.
Anybody that gets up on TV and cites their ethnicity for some reason, you already know what's governing their decisions.
Exactly. So I think, you take some of these sort of, I call them George Soros sites on the left, where, Mersheimer may have some influence there. But, other individuals like, let's say, Glenn Greenwald, he's certainly in that camp, where he's, you don't ever see him supporting, the initiatives that that Russia's, obviously, objectively on the right side of history on. Abby Martin's another George Soros site, where she won't, be objective about when, Western left-wing criticism like the Mersheimer opinion that you just stated. People aren't willing to, say that, hey, wait a second. Does anybody else, am I the only one in the room that sees that Russia has like rebounded from, three massive like destructions from the West in the last 100 years, and they're doing great. And it's not because they're attacking and murdering their neighbors. It's just, they're just rebounding from being, a victim of Western, because Russia wasn't looking for a war with Germany.
Well, we talked about that last time about the Russian oligarchs and the whole process. So
I kind of feel as though that. Yeah, I kind of feel as though we don't get the right perspective as children, and we're fed such a box of just tainted chocolates that. By the time you get to be older and you've gone through let's just say independent research, or you've gone through some retrospective analysis of where wait a second, that piece didn't fit. Why is it that I had that perspective that whole time? Not a lot of people can make that leap of faith. They just won't say, there's no way I was wrong my entire life.
Well,
I think
it's like
that's,
you said in the beginning, until somebody can detach themselves from their team, it's not really a smart versus stupid thing. It's psychological. If they can't detach themselves from their team, then they just cannot see anything but their predestined path. They just can't do it.
That's exactly right. And I think that's what happens with, the desire to see the news the way that you would expect it to be reported, and like you said earlier, they want to see it that way. It's because, that's how they're expecting to see it. They're like, well, wait a second, they're supposed to be the bad guy. You can't print them as good guy. That doesn't fit the color hat they're supposed to wear.
Yeah, it's Hulk Hogan versus Nikolai Volkov, man. USA, USA. But again, if anybody opposes their worldview, then they must be on another team. But it couldn't possibly be, because it's true.
Or you're just a conspiracy theorist.
Of course.
I was so glad to see. Now, you did say something about Mersheimer, but I was vindicated by Mersheimer this week. He came out and wrote a report that was actually printed in Foreign Affairs magazine. It, you know, that's the creme de la creme for the Council on Foreign Relations. That's their number one publication. So Foreign Affairs printed that that the Americans were, and the West were responsible for the coup in Ukraine. So Mearsheimer actually, in my opinion, and it made me kind of think, it's like, wait a second, why is the left wing portion of the Council on Foreign Relations allowing this to go on the Foreign Affairs magazine? Somebody has must have made a decision to say, look, there's no way we can hide this. You know, let's just come out and say that we, you know, things were done wrong here. And then that way, you know, we can at least say that we're a legitimate organization that did actually print the truth. So that was reported in the last week. CFR, Foreign Affairs, John Mearsheimer did say that the Americans were behind the coup, and this entire, well, not just the Americans, but the Americans and their NATO allies. So I was,
yeah, but you have to see the new spin they put on it.
I did read it. I didn't feel as though it was that spun. I mean, obviously, it wasn't as, you know, objective as it could have been, but it was more honest than most of the things I see coming out of Foreign Affairs magazine.
Oh, yeah, it's good for them.
Yeah.
That's a pretty low standard, though.
Well, I mean, you know, I could put the word a lot in front of it. It was a lot more honest than most of the stuff I see out of there. So, I mean, I was surprised to see that. I was like, that's an interesting article coming out of Foreign Affairs. I mean, I sent a message out to CNN because I was showcased on CNN of all shows, reliable sources. Liz Wall was on with this guy Brian Seltzer. Have you seen this guy? He's supposed to be like the key to reliable sources for CNN. Mm-hmm. And he's got Liz Wall on there for one thing as his reliable source who quits RT. And then they put up an interview that I did with Sophie Shevardnadze. And they said, oh, this is the kind of conspiracy stuff you see out of Russian television. I'm thinking, so I called, Brian Seltzer was, and so I called his cell phone about 2 hours after the show aired because my friends were all calling me and say, hey, you were on CNN. They're calling you a conspiracy theorist. I said, that's interesting. So I call him up and he goes, well, I don't normally have people calling me and inviting themselves to my show. I said, I don't want to be on your show. I said, my name is Scott Rickard. I said, do you know who I am? And he goes, no. I said, you showcased me on your show with Liz Wall today. I said, I was the guy you were calling a conspiracy theorist. He says, well, I'm not familiar with your name. I said, were you just reading cue cards? I mean, you're supposed to be a reliable source. So I ended up writing a letter to the producer of the show and, you know, letting him know that, you know, they're not very reliable. But I followed it up with the CFR Foreign Affairs article, because everything I said during that program with Sophie Shevardnadze was basically backed up by Mearsheimer's article this week. And you know, what was that? It was in March, so 6 months later, the conspiracy theorist was vindicated.
Yeah, so. It's not a dirty word to me anyway.
No,
even when it is a conspiracy, because that's all a covert operation is.
Well, think tanks, you know, the definition of a think tank is a place to strategize and plan to get something accomplished.
Through deception, yeah.
It doesn't always mean deception, but you know, there are some...
it's dishonest because they're not going to feed the public their sincere motives or anything. They always have a more acceptable pretext to offer the plebs.
I got to tell you, I've been to probably more than my fair share of those think tank meetings, and 9 times out of 10, you're right. But there's 10% of the time I've gone to some meetings and I've walked out of there going, now that was pretty damn good. I mean, that guy had the right perspective. You know, I met a guy at IPS, Institute for Peace Studies. Now, there's a lot of left-wing Sorosites in that organization, so don't get me wrong. I said 9 times out of 10, it's going to be like that. But the one guy I did meet, and he introduced me to Del Walters. Del was a filmmaker, and he produced a film in 2006 called Apocalypse Africa, Made in America. It's a documentary about American foreign policy in Africa and how it was responsible for over 20 million deaths in Africa since 1950 till now. And he goes into details of State Department. He's basically interviewing State Department individuals that were, you know, working for or in the cabinet of Nixon and so on and so forth. And it was really well done. And he made this documentary in 2006. And I'd never seen the documentary. I found out about it at one of these think tanks, Institute for Peace Studies in Washington. And he made the documentary in 2006. And it turned out that he was best friends with Eric Holder because they had gone to college together. He was the reporter that broke the story on Marion Barry and his coke habit and hooker habit. And so Del Walters gets this documentary out in 2006. And that's the last time that Eric Holder talked to him. Eric Holder wouldn't talk to him after that because the documentary is that damning against American foreign policy. So that, you know, when you do, and you said it earlier, when you do, you know, like, actually open the kimono and to tell the truth, you're ostracized. He'll never have a job in the news industry again. And anybody that he had as an inside source or a friend in the government is gone. You know, because that was, he crossed the line. He was too honest with his analysis of what the Americans had done in Africa, you know, for the last half century. So it was very, very interesting. I'd highly recommend that documentary. It's called Apocalypse Africa, Made in America, and it was done by Del Walters. And, you know, that is probably one of the best, hour and a half you can spend learning about the kinds of lies that were fed about what's actually gone down in areas where we're operating, incredibly, criminally and incredibly, selfishly. You know, we're basically controlling these areas for their resources. Very, very telling about what we were up to, as far as just to give you an idea, it wasn't a white nation that we were attacking. The Americans and the West have been very brutal with, brown-skinned societies around the world, especially in Africa. Africa has probably received the brunt of Western apocalypse. I mean, Western domination and South Africa alone, you know, what the whites did down there with apartheid. Obviously, Israel is a very similar. It's not in Africa, but it's certainly a very similar situation where a dark-skinned society has been dominated by an invading white force. So the United States, another clear example of the same practice that the West has done, you know, in areas where they've gone in and conquered and destroyed the societies that were there.
They're just all human shields, Scott. Entire continent.
Apparently, the indigenous people of the current North African continent were acting like human shields. Unfortunately, there's some of the stories that I've been able to uncover. You know, that just through independent research, there was one that blew me away during the gold rush in California. The American Indians, the indigenous people in that region were obviously causing some issues with the miners, and the British were paying 40 pounds sterling for every scalp you could bring in California, because they just basically were trying. So for a year, and by the way, 40 pounds sterling was about a year's salary. And so for these guys, about half the population of indigenous people in that region were wiped out in a year. And there was, you know, a proclamation, you know, for people, investors in the American gold rush from the British Empire were basically rewarding people to wipe out the indigenous people. And it's a it's a well-known proclamation that was done, you know, by the British to, you know, hey, we've got some problems with our mining operations out there. Let's pay a guy your salary for every scalp he brings in. Yeah. Unbelievable. Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Well, they put the last Yaqui Indian in a museum until he died from a fever, and that was in the 1900s.
Yeah.
That was also in California. And yeah. They had the Dawes Act in the 1929, where they made any religion other than Christianity illegal and arrested the religious leaders in Native communities across the entire country. And these things...
That's why I say this is really hypocritical, you know, when we talk about the, you know, this ISIS thing, you know, whereby, you know, we're talking about a society that, you know, is quote unquote not supposed to be, you know, culturally or a developed nation comparatively to the white dominated Western societies. And to be honest with you, the Western societies were like that, you know, pretty much less than 100, 150 years ago. The 1800s were horrific, you know, with the kinds of stories you were talking about.
Well, up until the 1970s, they were sterilizing American Indian women. The Family Planning Act, sterilizing people, giving Africans syphilis on purpose and watching it for science. So I don't blame it on them being white or not. I blame the government. Their government policies. Well, it's not a genetic disposition.
I'm not anti-white. I agree, but it's 67% population in the United States is still white, and they're very upset about, you know, these children who are coming from Central America, which, by the way, the Americans have been annihilating for over 150 years with their horrific foreign policy in El Salvador and Honduras and Nicaragua. So, and this is the region where they're coming from, which are, by the way, El Salvador and Nicaragua are the highest murder rates in the entire world. So they're escaping one of the most dangerous places on the world, which, by the way, we've been kicking around and causing trouble for over 150 years. So I do take responsibility as an American for the atrocities that are going on in those regions, because obviously we had something to do with it if we were there for 150 years, because it's not as though... last I checked, the Americans weren't conquered by El Salvador and Nicaragua. So
yeah, but history started yesterday.
Yeah.
You're not American. So, you're being un-American.
Yeah, now I'm anti-American. Why don't I go somewhere else? I get that a lot. And you know, that's the funny thing is that, no, I'm not anti-American. I know my history. I know the things that we've done.
That right there is un-American. You know history.
You're not supposed to know that's history. That's un-American. I'm quoting you on that.
Shut up and watch TV.
Shut up and watch TV. Didn't you see True Blood this week? Now get back to your television.
All right, Scott, we're out of time. We'll have to pick this up.
Game of Thrones and get the hell out.
Yeah, exactly.
Just take your pills and go back to watching the ball game.
What do you mean you know history?
Here's your pom-pom. Go.
I'm using that.
I'd like to do a show talking about some Native American issues at a later date. That's right up my alley, and I haven't focused on that for a while, so I'd like to have you back on and talk about that. But I appreciate your time talking about the propaganda on Ukraine and Syria and the Hasbro all around.
And, well, sadly, the Hasbro goes back to that time too, you know, so that's the worst part.
Well, there's a great book called The Real Arabs with two E's, like Hollywood Real. And basically you saw a shift where as early Hollywood was all demonizing Indians, you see all the Westerns and the cowboys killing them. Sure. And then you see a shift where the new Indians become the Arabs, where they're all in every Hollywood film. They're always hijackers and terrorists and things, and no context whatsoever about colonization.
So, I can imagine. Yeah,
I think the Palestinians should start wearing feathers. That'd be a good statement.
It's definitely you know, it's been going on for some time, and that's just a programming. You know, the programming of the human mind has not given people any kind of perspective that has any, you know, intellectual dialogue. You know, normally when I'm talking to people, I'm just thinking to myself, this person, I can tell that they have not ever learned anything, you know, outside of, you know, the sort of the status quo, what most Americans are, you know, sort of drowned on as they're growing up. So
shut up and watch TV.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. I mean, unfortunately, that's the mentality of the, you know, the 80-20 rule of the 80% of what we're dealing with in a society that, you know, people are like, well, what can you do to change it? I said, you can't do anything. You got to keep trying to spread information and educate people, because you're not going to change it without educating people.
Be quiet and go watch the Redskins play football. All right, Scott.
All right, man.
I'll talk to you later.
Take care, Ryan.
Thanks very much. Hi. Would you like to advertise on this show real cheap? As long as you're not selling tobacco or anything crazy, hit me up. Use the contact button on ancreport.com and say you're interested in advertising. If you have a banner, that would be nice, because that's going to be the first question to ask you. If you'd like a voice advertisement where I plug your product on the air, let me know. Write up a script, make sure it's not too long, and get in touch with me. Real cheap. Thanks, folks. Take care. And up next is Peter Lavelle. You don't want to miss that one.